Good afternoon and welcome back to Breaking
the Fourth Wall.
George, did we just make a jingle?
We did. That's what's going to happen.
Let's do another one.
Making the fourth wall.
We screwed up.
Okay. Hello, I'm John Montague.
And I am Nadine Crowe. And welcome back to Breaking the Fourth Wall.
Nadine Coyle from Girls Aloud.
What was that accent?
Horrendous.
Today we are going to talk about, well, be positive, what we actually love about this industry.
Because we do sound like grumpy grannies.
Yeah, we literally do sound like grumpy grannies. But I think it's really important. The whole idea with this podcast was to be as honest as we could be,
yeah,
respectfully.
And actually, you hear a lot of the positive bits.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't want to talk about the realities, but I think this podcast would be pointless if we were just like, oh my god, we love the costumes and the sparkles and the, you know.
Is that all you like?
That's what I like, yeah.
So here's the thing then, where we started to love this industry obviously began when we were kids and we first either took part in theatre or saw theatre. So when was the first time that you remember kind of wanting to be part of this world or just even just loving performing? Or
It was secondary school because, you know, we already talked about the fact I had a very musical family, but we did really, really fantastic musicals. And if you were kind of one of the music kids, you were in them. And it was the fact that, you know,
give me your roles, give me a CV.
You know, I played the rabbi in Fiddler on the Roof.
Of course you did.
Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Sharet, Malachi Elyon. I played Pooh Bah in The Mikado.
Yeah, great role.
But when I was the Mikado
or the Hot Mikado?
The Mikado. It was pretty hot.
Because you were in it.
Because the aircon had broke. But because, like, what 14-year-old was playing Pooh Bah in The Mikado, right?
Yeah.
Or doing, you know, playing Kurt in the Sound of Music at the age of 11 or 12,
right.
But in really quality productions.
Yeah, good quality productions.
And so it was just part of my life.
Yeah.
Having said that, I'd never, ever considered that I would go into it professionally until one summer I did the Clear Channel production of Tony. I was Tony in West Side Story.
Right.
And
I definitely see you more as an Anita.
Definitely. I see myself as an Anita, actually. That's weird you say that. I was Tony in West Side Story, and at that point, a few people came into my life. One of them was Denise Sylvie, she's, you know, producer on The Mousetrap now, and one of my singing teachers kind of heard me sing as a young, raw talent and said, have you ever thought about this?
I think there's something there.
Yeah. I think you should go down and meet Denise and just kind of think about the industry and stuff. And then actually Denise continued to come and see me and stuff when I was at uni. And so this sort of, I don't know, a kind of like, could I?
Yeah.
Feeling started to erupt in me and do I want to do this?
Yeah.
And then, you know, when I had the opportunity to go to drama school, it just kind of consolidated my skills.
It confirmed what you loved, but it also
taught me my shortcomings.
Right.
And I'm very honest with them. You know, when I go to an agent, I go, I'm not going to get through a dance school. There's only so many ways I can give tits and teeth and twerk.
Yeah,
in
you are extreme in a great way. You are extremely honest.
Yeah, I it's not going to happen.
You don't get. Sorry to interject. You don't get from a lot of people in the business, not because they're not honest, but because you're trying to sell yourself.
You want to get in the room.
Yeah, you're trying to mold yourself into getting there.
My worst nightmare is getting into a room where I know I haven't got the goods.
Yeah.
Because I know in a dance call the goods they're nowhere. It's not going to be this, like, some light's going to come down.
I don't believe that.
But you've seen me dance.
I have. You've danced with me.
I've done
many
a few private dances.
You have.
In that
I'm
time.
I'm a private dancer, dancing for money.
May her rest in peace. May she rest in peace.
May she rest in peace.
So yeah, I think that's kind of how it came into my life, and then really the rest is kind of slightly.
It's kind of like it just rolls on and rolls on and rolls on.
You decide whether you're going to get off or not, basically, at some point.
I
haven't yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the same. I guess, obviously, it was slightly different for me because, obviously, as I've said before, my mum's got a dancing school.
Yeah.
So I was kind of brought up in that world. I feel like the whole MGM vibe, the whole MGM films with Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire were a big, big thing to why I love this industry, because I felt that golden age of the movie musical was just, I just loved Hollywood. I just loved it. I just thought there was something so iconic about it. And Hollywood isn't like that now.
No.
You know, it feels more like then they weren't real people. Do you know what I mean?
Untouchable.
Yeah, Marilyn Monroe was not a real person.
Yeah.
She was a poster girl. She was just.
And now we've got like Jennifer Lawrence falling over on.
Yeah, I mean, who is
the Tonight Show?
And also, they're great actors and actresses. Yeah. You know, you never.
They're just more accessible.
Absolutely, and I think that was the way I loved that industry was the fact that you could, I guess, put people on a pedestal to kind of feel that they were, and not that I wanted to be that person, but I found it so interesting to why they got to be that person, like how they got to
but
be that person.
Do you not feel like you do get that feeling? Like, I just remember my first West End gig. With you. No, before you. There were many before you, John. And walking into the back of the Coliseum backstage with my costume on, seeing Glenn Close like warming up in the corner.
I mean, that's quite.
And having that, and then peeking round and seeing an auditorium full of 3,000 people.
I mean, that is quite iconic within itself, though. The fact that your first gig was you got to work with Glenn Close. I mean, that's special as well.
But I think at the beginning of School of Rock, when we hadn't done it 4,000 times.
When you met me, it was
when
like,
you,
oh my God,
like,
it's like working with Glenn Close.
What can I learn from this guy? Don't do it that way. But I remember like putting that bass guitar on that I couldn't play and my wig from PAX in Finsbury Park and walking on and thinking, this is really cool.
Yeah.
Like any job.
Yeah.
When I put my stethoscope around my neck the first time and walked out to hospital with my badge saying Dr. Heather Dean Crowe, I was like,
yeah,
brilliant. I don't feel that way now.
No.
So every job. But there is still that magical feeling that you feel just before you're going to go on
stage. Yeah, I also think there's a magical feeling still of when you know, I remember the call I got when I got Billy Elliot.
Yeah.
Like that first call of your first professional job. And don't get me wrong, because, you know, listen, I'm not disrespecting any jobs in the industry, because I'm sure a lot of people get that feel. But to know that your first job was a swing in a highly respected West End show at the age of 21, straight out of college. I mean, that's a...
Do you remember where you were?
Yeah, I was in my bedroom at home. And I remember just getting that call, and rehearsal started in 2 weeks. Rehearsal started in 2 weeks, and I had to find somewhere to live within 2 weeks in London. It was crazy.
I was in Rome.
Crazy.
I was wandering the streets of Rome, and my agent phoned and said, "You've got Sunset Boulevard with Glenn Close," and I could have died in that moment just there. I could have absolutely died. And
they are the highs. They are the moments you really can't beat.
It wasn't long before that my agent said, you know, we're struggling.
Right.
Like, you've done a few good off West End things.
Mm.
I'm not quite sure how we're going to make this happen. And then it was like the next week. This is the other thing I love about the business, right? You can have had like 5 rounds and a no,
yeah,
and then 3 weeks later you're accepting a contract for something that's just come from absolutely nowhere.
I think back to me. I think I've been very, very lucky. Yes, obviously there's been an element of talent and being fortunate, but I've been very lucky that I've sat in a theatre and watched 3 roles that I've then got to perform.
And that you wanted to. I think I followed a journey of you wanting to do stuff and then it happening.
Yeah, Waitress.
Just been unbelievable.
Waitress, School of Rock and Hamilton.
Yeah.
Were 3 shows that I was like, not only do I know I could do that role, but I would love to have the opportunity to do that role.
Yeah.
It's like you, I think you know as an actor,
I think
you can
we
do
knew
the role.
That, we knew that King George was coming for you eventually. We just didn't know how long it was
going to
be.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lovely thing to think. It was definitely a role that I just wanted to play.
Yeah.
And so I think when you do have the opportunity that you are playing the role that you're like, oh my God, I've always wanted to do this. And then you get the opportunity to do it. I mean, that's a really cool thing.
Yeah.
That's a really cool thing. And that's, but I don't know another industry that's like that. You know, do you know what I mean? I don't know if there's the same vibe.
It's, but do you know what?
Do you see that as a doctor? Do you want someone to be a doctor?
And you're
like, oh.
The first time I put a chest drain in, I felt that way.
Really?
The first time I led a cardiac arrest, I felt that way.
The first time you cleaned my bum, you felt that way.
The first time I did a rectal examination and told you that everything was fine, I felt that way.
You felt that, that love.
I felt like, wow, this is a real eye-opener. But it's a notion of, wow, I've got a skill and I got to use it.
Yeah.
And there was an outcome. I still get that buzz from auditions.
Really?
Unless it's something that I really don't want to do.
Which is normally everything.
Which is pretty much everything. No, unless it's something I really am like, I'm going in because I feel like I should go in rather than it's a job that I want. Some jobs that you don't want become jobs that you want. It's weird. You go into an audition room and you're like, wow, I want to be with these people.
Yeah.
You know, the material doesn't really excite me, but I've met a bunch of people that really do and I want to work with them. But there's still that like massive kick of like, learn a song, go in front of a bunch of people you don't know. It's kind of exhilarating. Here I am.
Yeah, I mean,
listen to me sing. And then if it goes well, you leave. I always go shopping, do you? I always get this like strong urge to shop.
Is it bad? I just eat.
It's the same. Buy or eat, yeah.
I'll tell you what, there's one thing I do love, and I don't think it's funny because I think you feel that you're very arrogant if you say this as an actor, but there is nothing like hitting a note, bang in the middle of a money note. There's no feeling like that. There's no feeling like making an audience laugh with a great gag or making them weep.
Or making them silent.
There's just certain things in theatre, not in acting, because in TV and film you don't get that reaction. I guess the only reaction you do get maybe in a film set is when people are silent because your performance is that wonderful, I guess. But I think in theatre you get that straight away from that audience. You get that automatic reaction. And I've sat in audiences where I watch other people and I'm like, gosh, they sound good, or God, their performance is exhilarating. Like, and to know that you are able to do that to people as well.
I love when you're doing some dialogue and it feels like us now.
Yeah.
It's somebody else's words, but it feels like you're in that space and you're just
living that moment.
Yeah, they're giving, you know, that old adage of acting is reacting.
Yeah.
But you're there, you're living it, and it's just everybody's kind of completely absorbed and it believes what you're doing and you feel it and it's just this. It just feels incredible.
It's a feeling of something that feels like the dots are connected.
Yeah.
I don't, it's very hard to always describe how it feels sometimes because you kind of can't. You just know that it's right. There's a feeling that it's right.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain that in depth or elaborate on that, but there's just some sort of feeling where you're like, from brain to heart, you're like,
to mouth,
this is it.
To stage. And also, one of the most frustrating things, but the thing that makes it brilliant, is that you can't recreate it every day.
No.
I think part of the brilliance of big famous actors like Judi Dench is they probably can. They find a way, but it's...
Yeah, but
it's,
you say
each day
that
is different.
You say that, and funnily enough, like every time I've watched like an interview with Judi Dench or whatever, she's in a dressing room like checking
same
the horses.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean?
Same.
Like she goes through the exact same process of what a majority of actors do. It's just the fact is she has that special something that she can switch on and switch off when she needs to.
I have to say to you, Joel, and I hate to name drop bloody Glenn Close all the time. Hi, Glenn.
Listen, Glenn.
You know, you would turn up to rehearsals and she would be there at the Limcat, making her cup of PG tips, asking you where the sugar was, sitting around, doing everything, coming to Ballon's with us to have a burger. And then you would sit in a circle, because that's how Lonnie used to do. Have you ever worked with Lonnie Price?
I've not worked with Lonnie Price, no. But I know who he is.
He used to, we would do stuff in a circle, and like notes all together.
Yeah.
And he would give a note to Glenn, and she would stand up, and she would try it like six different ways there and then. And you'd be like, wow, that is why she is.
But that's her process, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is what I mean, like, I remember, to name drop, not that I work with this person, but I remember a good friend of mine, Gemma Sutton, who's a wonderful actress. She did Gypsy with Imelda Staunton. And apparently the first day of rehearsals, Imelda asked for people to be sat in a certain place. And she was off book. She was off book.
Because she
had an idea of how things worked in her mind, and she wanted the relationships, like I think she had her two daughters either side of her, and I remember Gemma just saying to me, like, there's a quality, and you see why, like you just said about going, the reason to who they are, you see it. I mean, my I was very fortunate to work with Sheridan on Funny Girl, and the last 20 minutes of the show, she's very much on her own. So it's basically the end of Funny Girl, where Fanny Bryce's world has kind of collapsed and Nick Arnstein's gone to jail and she's just broken. And it's like this uplifting thing of going, I'm going to make it through, basically.
No one likes a broken Fanny.
No one likes a broken Fanny. And I remember, you know, we're at the downstairs at the Chocolate Factory, this dingy little place, and there's, you know, the creative team with Michael Mayer and Lynn Page and the associates. And then there's like, you've got a group of actors that are like Marilyn Cutts, Valda Avix, Gay Sopra, over sort of the age of 55 plus, a good sector of those actors. And then you've got myself and Matt Croke and all these sort of younger aspiring actors watching this girl dressed in ripped jeans a jumper, a denim jacket, like scatty trainers, and like her hair just tied up, break down in front of you. And you're just like, how do you have our attention? How do you do that dressed in the way you're dressed?
It doesn't matter.
How do you have that ability to do that? And that's what I love that about the industry, because I'm going, that's what makes you special. And I'm dying to get that. I'm dying to get that feeling of other people watch me and go, God, the way you
It's
did
weird
that.
When you see the dynamic between actor and director, the power shift. So probably for you and I, it's still very much the director is up there, mm-hmm. God.
Yeah.
And then when you bring somebody like Glenn or Sheridan into the room,
there are
almost, you suddenly see the director doing as they're told.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's not how I'll be doing it. And then kind of having that respect and giving the actor the space to go, I know what you, and I'll tell you if it's not working, but I know that you probably know better.
And granted, sometimes those are the actors that like the notes.
Yes.
They like to be given something to think about.
Yeah.
And I think that's what maybe other people don't realise, is just because you're at your A game, your Helen Mirren, your Julie Walters, whatever, you'll find they are the actors and actresses that turn around to the director and go, please give me notes.
Yeah.
Please give me something to think about, to work on, because their delivery is so natural.
Yeah.
It's just, it's unfathomable to try and teach someone how to do that.
Yeah.
You can't teach it.
Yeah,
it's a natural skill. And I just find that when I watch certain performances, I mean, one of the best performances I've ever seen, never worked with this person, was Denise Goff in People's Places Things.
Oh yeah.
And I was just,
that was fantastic,
blown.
Was that at the Lyric or
somewhere? It was at the Wyndham's.
Okay.
The Wyndham's. Yeah.
I think it transferred though. I think it was produced,
it was at the National.
The
it was at the National,
National
first,
it?
And then it went to the Wyndham's. And I remember I went with my friend Jackie Hughes, and we just sat there and we were like, one, who is she?
Yeah.
And two, what have I just experienced? What have I literally just experienced?
There, though, you have the marriage of a brilliant piece of writing.
Great piece of writing.
With a brilliant actress.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
It just fell together.
And, like, you know, there's certain people, like, if you shout, like Bertie Carvel. I think Bertie Carvel is just a genius of an actor. I've seen him in quite a few things. I saw him at Parade at the Don Mar. He played Leo Frank. I saw him play Donald Trump in The 47th. And it was it's just a masterclass. You've gone from a masterclass of playing a role. I mean, they were two real people, but one that we'll never know about. Like, we never met Leo Frank.
Yeah,
we don't know
what
he's like.
And one is a character in real life.
Yes. So he was you know, playing a role. Yes, all right, Leo Frank was real, but we've never met him. And then a caricature, exactly as we just said, a mimic. It was a mimic, but it was just
spot on.
Everything down. Everything. I was just like, you're a chameleon.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane.
Yeah. It's funny, I feel like one of the things I love the most about performing is almost slightly cathartic, and maybe it's slightly selfish, but when the part is more on center and I can access parts of me that on a normal day I wouldn't, because, you know, unless something, I guess, brought out the emotion in me on a normal, most days are just normal, aren't they?
Yeah.
But to kind of live yourself in scenarios and in experiences that you haven't had, and access how that pretend scenario would make me feel, and then to share that, I find that kind of when I'm at my best, when I can show the other ranges of my emotion, the way I express, that I don't really get to do, because I'm lucky to have lived a life where I haven't had horrific things happen to me.
Do you think, being, like as you said before, being a very musical person, having a very musical upbringing, that music especially hits you in a different way? Like, or, you know, an overture, or there's something about an orchestra that makes you go, this...
Yeah.
There's a feeling I have.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll know, my hat trick of jobs is I work as a perfumer, and I think scent, which I also think is a missing level of theatre, in theatre, by the way, in terms of senses, scent, and then listening and hearing music, are definitely the things that transform
me. Using your
me.
Senses, basically.
Yeah. I'm much more interested in a good play than I am a good musical these days.
Interesting enough, just to talk about scent, which I find really interesting, because obviously I was in Waitress.
Yes.
And the theatre smelt like a pie shop.
Baking, yeah.
Do you think that's automatically something that really helps?
I've only ever seen one piece of theatre that really used scent, and it was a horrific play. It was The Exorcist.
Right.
You know, and they tried to make it a the theatre into some kind of haunting.
Right.
But they used kind of when they were in the desert, you could smell incense and, you know, spices and stuff, and it's so immersive. I think that the triggering of people's emotions, that kind of very visceral reaction, can be achieved with music, but not half as rapidly as it can be with scent.
Interesting.
But maybe we can talk about that more later because it's slightly off topic.
One thing I will say is I think that when you're in, I would say, musical theatre, let's say, there are so many elements. Like, for example, I will use Hamilton as an example. When I watched Hamilton the very first time I saw it, the whole show was epic, but the one thing I couldn't get over was the choreography.
Yeah.
I felt like how this choreography, how this storytelling molded into the story, and how it didn't just, of course, there's one or two things that are like, let's say, dance breaks in inverted commas, but the way that Andy Blackenbuehler, who, you know, won countless awards for it, was able to mold this world around people's bodies where it didn't look hard work. It looked like the movement came out of the story rather than it being like, we're doing a dance routine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think choreographers have got... It's not like with respect because these people led the way. It's not like the Agnes de Mille days who created the ballet chorus for the Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals,
yeah.
who granted did a lot of work for these choreographers now. You know, I can't take that away, but you can see how movement has evolved into storytelling rather than it being about we're just now going to dance.
Yeah.
You know, like I know a lot of people, it might not be their favorite if they're non-dancers, but Cats was a huge show for, you know, with Gillian Lynn and what she created, the storytelling
through
the body,
yeah.
through the cats.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think she gets enough credit for how monumental she made that show, like what impact that show had for dancers alone.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously everyone still goes around about cat school and all these things, and I just think that when you're musical, you know, you always find there's a great score that does that. When you are from a dance point of view, you always see a great routine or a great choreographic piece that makes you feel like that. And also, like I said, with people voice of things, you know, when you're an actor, you see a performance that emotionally takes you on a journey.
I have to say, even as a non-dancer, there was one dance. Number in Sunset, and granted, Stephen Mear, if you're listening, saw my face on the fourth row, brought me to the front row, saw my feet on the front row, and pushed me back to the fourth row. But
I love that.
Doing Stephen Mear says,
Nadine, we're doing that story of Stephen comes
Nadine,
on it.
It's just walking. thank you, Stephen. So, you know, the feeling of being in a dance number with a whole company, wow, that's the like, even though I was like probably doing same arm, same leg. It feels amazing, that feeling of like, it's like singing together,
yeah.
dance, that togetherness, the kind of, I mean, the if anybody's not familiar with Nadeem Naman's work, The Broken Wings, listen to the finale, and that kind of, the whole cast coming on stage and just blasting the audience with a wall of sound, it's giving me like goosebumps right now thinking of it, because that feeling of connecting and the kind of fine adjustments everybody's doing with their voices to gel and be, you know, the tuning, the harmony, the overall timbre of the sound you're making, and watching an audience, because we were right at the front of the stage at the Haymarket, an audience just being like, it's almost like physically being blown away by a wall of sound. That's what it's about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we could keep going on and on and on about how many amazing things. The fact is that regardless of what we create with each topic we have in our episodes, we love this industry.
Yeah.
There are so many amazing things about this industry.
When anybody says to me, you're not committed because you've got another job, I turn back and say to them, I'm committed because I've got another job.
Yeah.
I've got another job and I'm still learning my audition material. I've got another job and I'm still doing my self-tapes because I bloody love it and I want to be here.
And also, who's anyone to tell you that you should choose one career?
Well, that's what education does, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
we're not
correct.
Like the States where everyone's doing dual majors and you can be like neuroscience and dance.
Yeah.
It's just...
I did both.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I'd come to you straight away if I had any neurological issues. I think that wraps up this.
That wraps up.
I feel
we
joyful. I've got a spring
yeah.
in my step. I'm going to step all change out of here.
I'm ready to do the show.
Are you?
Yeah, I am.
I wish I was doing the show. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Breaking the Fourth Wall. We will, of course, be back with you next week for more of a joyumphant. That's
Sorry.
Joyful and triumphant, a joyumphant romp.
See you soon,
See
guys.
You. Bye.